Welcome to Discovery and Inspiration, a podcast from the National Humanities Center. I'm Jacqueline Kellish, Director of Public Engagement at the Center and your host for this episode. In 1996, the exhibition entitled Bearing Witness, Contemporary Works by African American Women Artists was produced for the Spelman College Museum of Fine Arts contribution to the Olympic Games held in Atlanta, Georgia. Today, Dr. Jontel Teresa Robinson, curator and assistant professor at the Legacy Museum at Tuskegee University, is undertaking a multi-tiered initiative to reflect upon and advance the work of that exhibition 30 years later. Both of these projects highlight the contributions of African-American women creators while seeking to preserve the cultural heritage of African-American people and instilling a commitment to conservation in future generations. Welcome, Jontel. We're so delighted to have you with us today.
What an honor to be here. Thank you so much, Dr. Kellish.
Absolutely. Jontel, you serve as curator and assistant professor at the Legacy Museum. I'd love to start by having you tell us a little bit about how you balance these different aspects of your professional responsibilities and how you understand the relationship between teaching and curation. Do you see them as distinct types of engagement, or do you see them as two sides of the same coin?
Well, this is quite a balance because the museum has two major areas of interest. The visual arts, we have an extensive art collection, African, African-American, American, European, and Oceanic. Creative works and artifacts and utilitarian objects that were made. We are also a public health, science, and medicine museum. The museum is a bioethics museum, which arose from the official apology of President Bill Clinton for the United States Public Health Service untreated syphilis study in the Negro male. Both of these areas require enormous amount of work and attention. And with the pandemic and the disparity among ethnic groups in America, regarding who was surviving COVID-19 and who was not, this opened up so much attention by media outlets to the ethics around the study and the ethics around the pandemic and who received vaccines and when and who survived and did not survive. And because we are a bioethics museum, we receive so much attention, awareness, and notice during and after the pandemic. And to your question, how do I understand the relationship between teaching and curation? Well, let me say that I oversee and manage the collections, and at Tuskegee, curator is a major position. I am responsible for all the exhibitions, collections, funding, academic engagement, to administration, alumni, students, professionals, professors, and employees, and to the public. Curating and teaching are about educating people. And as curator, it is about the collections that I manage at Tuskegee and how these collections might be utilized to improve the lives of the people who interact with them and come in contact with them. So that's key. That is key. And as a teacher, it is about making certain the mission of the museum is being delivered to the people. And this is part of the apology from President Clinton to make sure these exhibits and works from its art collection are interpreted correctly and additionally, and to make sure that public health, science, and medicine are telegraphed to the public so that they can improve their lives and better their lives.
That's a wonderful answer. And it's so clear that you have tremendous amounts of responsibility and commitments, both internally within your university community, but also more widely on a national level and even on a transhistorical level. I'd love to move on and talk a little bit about the exhibition Bearing Witness, which was the first exhibition and catalog of contemporary African-American women artists touring America for the Spelman College Museum of Fine Arts contribution to the 1996 Olympics. And I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about what the experience of putting together that exhibition was like and how you went about selecting the artists who were featured.
Thank you so much for that question, because I get a chance to say that, first of all, the experience was transformative. And here I am, as we approach the 30th anniversary, going back and looking at it again, realizing that we need to do something again about this exhibition. And that in 1996, here we are having for the first time a major exhibition of Black women artists. That's kind of startling that it took until 1996 to get that to happen. It was an enriching and exuberant experience. And it is very rewarding now to look back and to see the success that so many of the artists received post Bearing Witness. And to be curating such an exhibit at Spelman's is a very elegant museum. The Spelman College Museum of Fine Art is the only museum in the nation dedicated to art by and about women from the African diaspora. Initial plans for the museum were spearheaded by the arts faculty. And I was on that arts faculty. I was part of that arts faculty who believed that visual art is an essential component of a liberal arts education and that it plays a significant role in encouraging intellectual growth. And it has served as a vital resource for the Spelman community and the Atlanta University Center since it opened in 1996. Really opened around 1995. The Olympics was in 1996. The Spelman Museum is an internationally respected nexus for excellent exhibitions and programs and has a renewed commitment to growing and exhibiting the permanent collection of arts. Now, these artists, you asked me, you know, how did I find these artists? Well, that was my job. That was my job. I taught art courses at Spelman, and I was aware of broadly the work of Black women artists in the nation. I was immersed in the possibility of this exhibition. So I was aware of what was occurring in the arts in the U.S., and I knew I wanted that exhibit to be about African-American women artists. And at the time, I was able to select the most impactful and impressive Black women artists nationally. And because I had done so much research on Black women artists, I knew who should be in the show. And I want to just move ahead just a bit and say that in preparation for the 2026, it has been unreal, because it's like it's been an explosion of women artists, of women artists from Africa, from South America, from the Caribbean, from the United States, African artists living on the continent and also living in Europe. I mean, it's just been an explosion. And I know you can hear it in my voice. I'm so passionate about it. And I'm so excited about the possibility of what we will be able to do with this next exhibit.
That's wonderful. We love hearing your passion for this. And it's always so rewarding to see just the explosion and proliferation of new creative talent, especially among Black women. So it's fantastic that you've been a part, not only of witnessing that, but of helping to really popularize a lot of this work and bring some of these artists to the forefront or to new audiences through your work. And so I would love to ask if there is perhaps one artist from Bearing Witness, the 1996 iteration, whose work in life you can tell us about in a little bit more detail for our audience.
Well, I have two things to share with you. I have to share with you about Elizabeth Catlett's place on the Spelman campus. If you have not, Spelman's campus is magnificent. If you have not visited, you really do. It is the number one HBCU in the country, and the campus is just magnificent. And I remember when I was working there, there is art all over the campus. And there was an Elizabeth Catlett sculpture that was in one of the dormitory suites. And I used to wonder, did the students understand this was Elizabeth Catlett? They were passing her sculpture every morning, you know, in the evening they would come in. I mean, it was just so, Spelman made it feel like it was happenstance, but it was a pretty big deal to have an Elizabeth Catlett sculpture in your foyer, okay? If there is one work that I would like to focus on for your audience, it would be Elizabeth Catlett's work, The Sharecropper. And let me tell you a little bit about Elizabeth Catlett, because her themes have remained constant over time. She had feminist roots. She celebrated women. And her celebration of women is really universal. It's not African-American women, it's women. Their power, their politics, their bodies, and their bond with their children. And she was always forwarding and foregrounding Black and brown standards of beauty. And she did a very important series called The Negro Woman, and The Sharecropper, done in 1970, is from that series. The work is epic in its historical breadth, and it's a lino cut, okay? It's a print, it's a lino cut. And the way Elizabeth Catlett cuts into the linoleum, remember, this is a sharecropper. This is a person whose status in America, when Elizabeth Catlett was creating this piece, was very modest. But in this linoleum cut, she creates a shimmering design of cuts that define the woman's hair, her hat, her features, her face, her nose, her neck. And then my favorite part is this one safety pin that adorns her garments. This is quintessential Elizabeth Catlett, creating this powerful, shimmering, classic piece with this interplay between these muted greens and browns and grays. And you know, this is a print. So I have to tell you that when you're making a print, when she's cutting into the linoleum, she has to think backwards so that when she puts the paper on it to print it, there will be the reverse. So you have to do the opposite of what you want finally, and when your print is displayed. So it's a brilliant exercise that she has created of the printmaking technique of this very modest woman who is given, who is elevated in our eyes.
I love hearing you talk about this artwork because you really make it come to life with these vivid descriptions. I can tell how much it means to you and how much it's impacted you. Thank you so much for reflecting on that work. You've alluded previously, Jontel, to the fact that your work at the center this year has really focused on conducting research for the 30-year anniversary of Bearing Witness. And that involves a lot of different component parts. There's a digital version of the 1996 exhibition, for example. And there's also another exhibition and catalog that you've called Revelations from Bearing Witness that you're preparing for 2026. There's so much to this project. And I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about how you're juggling all the different parts that are going into this work.
There's no way that I can do it in a little bit. It's a big bit. But what I will say is that each one of these components in itself is critical. I've got to look back at the 1996. I've got to do the research and archival work for the digital version. And then I've got to focus on the 2026, who's going to be in it, how will it be presented, who will be in the catalog, who will be writing. It's all major, no little bits, all big bits. The National Humanities Center, I really have to give praise to the National Humanities Center. This exhibit would not be possible without the National Humanities Center. I'm not kidding. Because of the library services, the reference services that are there, and you being able to find things that you need that nobody else can find that will help with the research and the writing. So I have to give a shout out to the National Humanities Center because they have made the work, it's not easy work, but they have made the work doable. I wanted to say that in looking back, it has been amazing to see what has happened in 30 years. It's very humbling, and it's also an opportunity to engage a different audience and a new public about African-American women artists and African women artists in the diaspora. So it's the best of all possible worlds. I want to also tell you that I've had to do research on the Atlanta Olympics, how that happened. You know, and I wasn't even thinking about all of that when I was in 1996, you know, the Olympics, they happen. That's not true. They don't just happen. It was a deliberate and very ordered and very serious and very political steps to the Atlanta Olympics. And I have learned that since I have been, you know, doing the research. Atlanta was not a shoe-in. In fact, Atlanta was considered not a possible winner because it was up against so many other giant cities internationally, but Atlanta won. And I have to say that it was because of Andrew Young, who was a former UN ambassador. It was because of Mayor Maynard Jackson, who was in his second term as mayor from 1990 to 1994. And for whom the Atlanta Airport is named. All of these people were integral in the bid for Atlanta to win the Olympics.
We are lucky at the NHC to have a fabulous library, and they do make the process of researching topics much easier. And I know, Jontel, you've always had your finger on the pulse of the contemporary Black art world and the amazing women creators who are coming to the fore every year. But I wonder what other kinds of sources or archives have you looked at over the past year to complement the work that you're doing and to complement the knowledge you already have about the contemporary art world?
I have had to go to the archives at the Atlanta History Center. I have had to go to the archives at the Atlanta newspapers, the Atlanta Constitution, the old Atlanta Journal. I have had to go through all of those archives. I have had to go to personal archives of individuals who were affiliated with this project. And I think that the one thing that really gave me pause, as I have said to you, was that there were innumerable years in planning the Olympics and all of the people who were involved, and it was so selfless. You know, it was a few people doing the work that would make the Olympics possible. And it had an incredible economic impact on the city. And you can still see vestiges of the Olympics when you come to the city now. Some of the architectural features and all that you see in the city are left over from the 1996 Olympics. So pretty amazing.
That's really meaningful to think not just about the specific artistic work you were highlighting, but to reach beyond it and think about all the events that the Olympics encompassed and how they made such a difference for the community, the city of Atlanta. So I look forward to seeing the results of all that research. I'd like to close our conversation today, Jontel, just by having you reflect a little bit on the challenges and the opportunities that are associated with revisiting your early work. So you're bridging a 30-year gap between the 1996 exhibition and the 30-year anniversary in 2026. That means, as you've said, looking back at this work's legacy in the contemporary moment. And so I wonder if you can talk about the biggest benefits and opportunities of doing this work beyond what you've already showcased, and also talking a little bit about whether there have been particular challenges to building on your earlier work in this way.
The biggest benefits are the ability to reference the information formally, as through the library services at the National Humanities Center. The challenges, there are so many media opportunities. And if I'm going to be fair, if I'm going to address creativity in all of its manifestations as it relates to women, African diasporic women, and what they're doing, that means that it's not only just exhibits, but we're talking about performances. And I just saw a performance by Ada Pinkston in Baltimore. She is perched on a plinth that was originally for a Confederate leader. And she is doing a performance on that plinth. The sculpture of the Confederate leader has been removed. And she is on this plinth. She has on a white gown. And this individual's performance was funded by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation and their attempt to look at America's monuments, old and new. And Ada Pinkston is doing a tribute on this Confederate plinth, as it were, to the Mississippi activist, modest woman, just like the sharecropper, Fannie Lou Hamer. Fannie Lou Hamer was a part of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And to see her doing this tribute on this plinth in this white gown, and she has a gold scarf over her face, the artist, you don't even see the artist's face. And to see her rocking and moving on top of this plinth, I mean, it just brings all kinds of feelings. You know what was on the plinth before. Here she is. She's rocking back and forth in the sun. And oh, it was just so. I've got not only the formal work to do, you know, the exhibition catalogs and all of that, but I've also got other media to address. So it's a very challenging, it's an opportunity, but it's also very challenging work to make sure that everybody is included. Every artist can't be in the exhibition, but of the ones that are in it, it's got to be the right choices.
Absolutely. As you say, what an opportunity, but also what a tremendous sense of responsibility. This work is so important. And I know I speak for all of us when I say we're so excited to see what comes out of this. And I look forward to hopefully traveling to see elements of the exhibition in person as they occur as well.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kellish.
I'd like to thank Dr. Jontel Robinson for joining us today on this podcast. And thank you to our audience who tuned in as well. Please make sure to join us next time for the next episode of Discovery and Inspiration from the National Humanities Center.